Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing?
Matthew, I'm good, and I have an important question for you. I was using some ketchup the other day, and by using, I mean eating. And I thought, man, ketchup is great. Then I started to think about various condiments. I love mustard. You can't put on as many things, but it's still great. Relish in a moment, take it or leave it. Then I got down to some of the more exotic condiments. Guacamole, salsa, mayonnaise, things that you don't use every day. And I started thinking, what's the champion of the tier two condiment?
Let me first say, is guacamole, I know that it is a condiment. Sorry, for a second, I was going to push back. I'm going to go salsa you can use in eggs. Like when I do scrambled eggs, I'll sometimes throw in a little salsa. But I think it's the mayonnaise, whether it's for, chicken salad, tuna salad, whether you use it in a coleslaw. I'm going to go with the mayonnaise, even though I understand a lot of people make fun of mayonnaise, just like they make fun of ketchup.
Mayonnaise has such a bad rap.
And it does.
The irony is, Matt, the opposite is true. I'm with you on this. Mayonnaise is incredibly versatile. It makes, have you ever said, man, the mayonnaise ruined that thing I ate? No, it always makes better. From tuna salad to potato salad to...
Yes.
Coleslaw to, anytime mayonnaise enters the picture, it's good.
It's a tangy delight that raises the floor of whatever you're eating, but it's going to get a bad name the same way that the real condiment snobs, they look down on mayonnaise, they look down on ketchup, and they're the ones that pretend they really love relish when they really don't.
You raise an important point, and I think there's one main culprit why. Miracle Whip.
Yes.
Remember Miracle Whip when we were kids?
Yeah.
And eating Miracle Whip was the equivalent in culinary terms of failing an IQ test. It wasn't the best.
Yeah.
I used to eat it out of the jar, but I was a kid.
Yeah. It was would it be defined as this sort of low rent, white trash sort of condiment? I'm trying to remember what the general consensus is about Miracle Whip.
You nailed it, Matt. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but there are certain foods that people look down on because they're associated with big class A eating. Kraft dinner, hot dogs, bologna, Miracle Whip. Yep. All of these things everybody eats, but somehow you have to pretend that you don't. I don't believe in guilty pleasures, as you know.
Yeah.
If I like it, I like it. And I like enough highbrow snooty stuff that I don't feel like I need to prove my bona fides. And it humanizes me, Matt. I love Shakespeare and hot dogs. That's what makes me such a lovable companion to you on this pod. But you're 100% right. And I feel like mayonnaise got sucked in, even though mayonnaise is kind of fancy in a way.
It can be.
All right. Well, I feel like that's gone as far as you can go. Let's talk about the Leafs.
By the way, first off, Bob, we could go an hour on condiments. Your concern is not that's as far as it could go. Your concern is we could go much further, but we should stop.
I've stopped doing this, but do you remember I used to keep a time check on how long it took us to get to the first topic? And it was usually between 8 and 12 minutes.
Yep.
And 9 minutes in, they brought up sports.
Well,
today's a neat, tidy 4 or 5.
I have, like everyone, here's my question with Peter Mrazek.
Okay.
Why is he nervous in net? You're talking about an organization. It's not like the 1980s Philadelphia Flyers, where it's like, you better go out there and perform or we're going to murder you in the locker room. This is an organization, very progressive. Every resource is there to help the player both physically, mentally, and emotionally. You then also have a team that scores lots and lots of goals. So you don't enter the net going, I better make 45 saves or we're screwed. This isn't Hasek with the Sabres. So why is it that Mrazek looks scared, uncomfortable, skittish, whatever emotional adjective you want to use?
He plays net like the Benicio del Toro character in Usual Suspect, Fenster, when he's being examined, cross-examined by the cops. That's what, like, that's like Mrazek and Net, where it's just like, whack, whack. We're doing it, whack, whack.
Oh, Bob, your analogy way better than mine on the morning show today, which was just when I caught a fish and it was flopping around. And I only used that one because I wanted to say the word dinghy on air.
Mm-hmm. Although I will say that is really good. Like, that's accurate.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking the other day about how goaltending has become boring and it's just about squaring up and being big. Mrazek doesn't seem to have that problem. It's certainly not boring when he's in net.
No, it's not.
It's aggravating, but it's certainly not boring. And then, of course, the inevitable post, you know, poor performance Dubas trend on Twitter, which does raise a good point. He is getting paid a lot of money, this Peter Mrazek.
Oh, yeah.
It's 3.8.
It's God. I just right now, I am wondering about the mental state of both goalies. Now, with Jack Campbell, maybe a bunch of his problems were the rib injury. We'll see. But when Jack Campbell says, I've got to stop being so hard on myself. And it's like, dude, all you've been is hard on yourself since you got here. And even after he said, I got to stop being hard on myself, a second later, he said, you know, even allowing one goal is unacceptable. I'm like, dude, what are you trying to do here?
Like Chris Farley in the sketch with Paul McCartney when he asks him about being in the Beatles. And afterwards, he's like, stupid, stupid, dumb, dumb. And he's punching himself in the head. You mentioned the mental state of Peter Mrazek. And I thought, does he mean Jack Campbell? Because honestly, you got it, buddy. It describes both of them. I don't know what House of Horrors that locker room is, but both of these goalies seem shell-shocked.
But doesn't that feel weird? All you've seen, and again, I don't know what's going on in the minds of these guys when they go home or anything like that. I'm just looking at the nuts and bolts of it, where it is a young team that's done nothing to support. There's not one even slight passive aggressive, you know, line in any press conference from any Maple Leaf player. And Dubas and just everything they brought into this locker room in terms of a support staff, everything is there for you to succeed. And they don't need you to be great. They need you to give a quality start. Can you give us 6 innings and 3 earned run? We'll take care of it from there.
I remember once I was watching, I'm going to go to the CFL here for a second and I'll bring it back. I was watching a CFL game with, as always, because you know me, I love my Argos. I was watching a game once live with Landsberg and Adrian Smith got burned for a touchdown. And, pardon me. He did get burned for a touchdown, but previous to that, he had played really well and had some great play. I'm like, God, is he ever fast out there? He's a cornerback from the Argos back in the day. And then he got burned for one. And Landsberg looked at me and he said, Adrian's fast, right? But you have to be able to hit, right? If you are fast but can't hit, you're in the CFL. If you can hit but you're not fast, you're in the CFL. If you can do both, you're in the NFL. Point being, in a convoluted way, if you're going to succeed in the NHL, you kind of need to be good at everything. The physical stuff, the mental stuff, all the sides need to be taken care of. And there's lots of people who are incredibly physically gifted. You're like, this is a no-brainer. This person's going to be a great player. And they're not, because maybe they don't have what it takes between the ears. And that seems a little bit cruel, but in a meritocracy like sports, it's performance-based and it's kind of cruel.
Yes. And to add to that, it's not saying if it doesn't work out for Mrazek or Campbell, it's not saying that they are mentally weak individuals. It's to your point, it's about the meritocracy, but also the highest level of competition one of the highest levels of competition we have on planet Earth, like right up there with like CEOs and whatever it is those people do. But you've got to be almost extraordinary in terms of your mental approach to your life and your job and your ability to push out fear, your ability to ignore failure. And that is just as extraordinary as your ability to do 100 push-ups and then, you know, and then run a 4.340. And some guys don't have it, just like most human beings don't have it.
Matt, both me and my sister were raised in a very musical home. And we both, from a very early age, played a ton of music, and I went on to be in a band that was pretty good. But by the time I hit 25, you know, I ran my course, you know?
Yeah.
And my sister went on to become a professional musician. She lives in Europe. She's an opera singer. And you know what the big difference is between me and her? It wasn't work ethic. It wasn't how much we cared. She has a better ear than I do, you know, and that's all it is. It's just a better ear. You know, I think that your mindset can overcome a lot of things, but not at the highest level. You know, it's funny. We look at the NFL combine and think it's great. Oh, the standing, you know, crazy, like the standing broad jump. Like these guys are elite athletes. Like who cares about a couple inches on a standing broad jump? Except for the fact that GMs know that's the difference.
And
it's the difference between being a step behind or in front of the play.
Yes. Yeah. And then on the mental side, I was going to use Michael Phelps, but that's just a weird ass body. I think a lot of the best like tennis players or swimmers or anyone who does like individual sports, the one thing that sets them apart is the mental side, that they can handle the loneliness better than 99%, and they can thrive in it more than the 99% of everyone else. And to again, back to your point, to make it in the NHL, you kind of need to be very good at all of it.
Or you can be a backup, which is not an insult. Like we're talking about being the second best goalie on a team in the greatest league in the world. I mean, that's such an enormous accomplishment. It blows my mind. I remember Jamie McLennan talking about his career as a goalie, and you know, he was obviously an incredibly talented athlete. And he said at a certain point, though, he recognized that his greatest usefulness would be to excel at being a backup, which meant knowing how to be mentally prepared to go in on a moment's notice, knowing how to be supportive of the guy in front of you and also the team around you, you know, and he kind of made a professional study of what it meant to be a backup. Now he would have been a starter, except that there were guys who were always just a little bit better than him, but he became an excellent backup. And maybe that's what Jack Campbell is supposed to be. It's just a guy who can come in 20 to 25 games a year, keep the room light, give you quality starts, but in the end, on a championship team, he's your second best goalie.
And that last sentence is scaring the hell out of every Leaf fan, because Toronto right now is 4-3, 5-4 in every game. And that is wonderful in the regular season, especially if you bet the over. But come the playoffs, you know, that it's going to be their undoing. It's scary. And I guess what we're all holding on for is one of two things. Dubas pulls magic out of his hat to bring in another goalie, or Jack Campbell, his struggles over the last 60 days was more about his ribs, and he can find himself a good mental place to be in. Because Campbell was very good last year. He was Vezina level for the first 2 months, but then since then it has cratered.
The thing about being Vezina level for 2 months is, again, to make the analogy to starting pitching, people fall in love with a couple things. Like, remember when Aaron Sanchez had a great year?
Oh, yeah. Led the American League in ERA with 3.
Right? And he really did. He had a great year. And he was an A-plus prospect. And he was a lefty who could do so much. But he never really lived up to it after that. And, like, baseball is filled with guys like that. And increasingly, I see a comparison between starting pitchers and goalies in that the hardest thing to do is be consistently good. You know, there's so much strategy that goes into beating just you and your need to constantly adapt and to forget mistakes and to rise to the occasion and to, you know, have an incredible endurance to go in all the time and not, you know, let your performance quality drop. Like, it just seems like such a Herculean task. I'm not surprised there's only 5 or 6 people in the world who can really do it.
It's why it always bothers me in any post-game press conference after a loss, pick your sport, pick your team, when they say we just have to be more consistent. And I always hate the word just, because it minimizes the word consistent. I just got to pick something up from the store, but I just have to be more consistent. So basically you just have to do the hardest thing in professional sports, which is consistency.
The difference, it's a problem in terms. And the difference between a talented player and a good player is consistency.
Yeah.
The NBA, for example, we're bouncing around different sports, but the NBA is filled with guys who have the ability to go 20 and 10 on any given night, any night at all, against any competition. It's the best league in the world. Pretty much I'm going to say 50, 60, 70% of the league could have a monster night any night, but they don't. And why is that? Or they might have it one night, but then for the next two nights, they drop right off. Like I'm watching Gary Trent's numbers.
Exactly.
And he puts up 30 and you're like, oh my God, this guy's like shooting like Steph Curry. Except for the next night when he puts up 14. Consistency is what is the distinction between a good player and a talented player.
Yeah. And Gary Trent Jr. is the perfect example. Goes on the hot streak. Then they lose Fred VanVleet and he's shooting 20%.
I want to come back to Fred. Let's put a pin in that because I got some thoughts on that.
Sure.
So you're Dubas. Like, okay, Matt, be Dubas. Comb your hair, put on some glasses, look preppy. What do you do?
Well, first I spend 20 minutes talking about how we have full faith and we trust everyone in this locker room.
It doesn't sound like Sheldon Keefe does.
No. Well, that's the thing. It's easier to have trust as the GM during the season than the coach. The coach is living it every minute. Here's the thing, Bob, and this is the unsatisfactory answer. I don't know what you do. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury said he doesn't want to be traded. And if you can figure out a way to get him, you're going to have to do a lot of financial and cap gymnastics just to get something like that done. But there's no guarantee out there. None of the other goalies that you may or may not be able to get, none of them I feel great about. You know, you say, oh, we can get Holtby. All right. Maybe he's the answer. Or maybe Jack Campbell's ribs get healthy and he's the answer. Like, that's the thing. When it comes to goalie, I wish I had this path. You know, I think it's easier to look at a path for a Mason or something defensively. I don't know what the path is for goalie. I honestly don't.
Matt, your answer, I think, is the only honest one. This is really just a go with your gut and hope it works out. Because I don't know that you can come up with a plan. I don't know that there's any strategy that you can execute at this point. You know, there are too many variables. The market isn't great for goalies. Bringing in a goalie out of nowhere to suddenly become your number one guy and run to the cup, like, that seems like a bit of a wing and a prayer.
Yeah.
Number one guy who has been good at different times, who's injured right now, who the team loves, and I'm sure that they would be happy to get behind him, but you just don't trust him. Honestly, like, there's a donkey behind each of those three doors. Remember, let's make a deal.
Yeah.
Two of the doors had behind them, there were prizes. One of them, you get a donkey. I feel like there's three donkeys waiting for each door.
As of right now, on March 11th, I 100% agree. It feels like those are the only options out there. They're all donkeys. Prove us wrong. That'd be fantastic. Here's my analogy. Kyle Dubas at the trade deadline. He's Han Solo in Empire Strikes Back when they're going through the asteroid field and C-3PO is explaining the odds of this working and Han just yells, never tell me the odds. That's how it feels like with Kyle Dubas. It's like the odds of this working with Holtby or with going or sticking with Campbell are blah, blah, blah. Shut up. Don't tell me the odds. Like, we're going to just try our best.
I love it. Well, you know, maybe we should get Phil Kessel so we can go on a Kessel run.
Oh, shame. I should not be laughing at that.
I apologize for nothing.
Congratulations, Phil. Baby daughter yesterday, and you looked pretty good on the ice last night.
You know, I don't want to hear anything about last night's game and officiating. Yes, in OT, it was
horrible.
It was a missed call. Like, there's just no two ways about it. And the people who have done the studies to show that the Leafs are really at the bottom of the league in terms of drawing penalties, I don't know what to tell you. Like, somebody has to be at the bottom. It's not necessarily a conspiracy. There might not just be a team that plays physically enough that they draw penalties. I don't know the answer.
But Bob, yeah. Oh, no, I agree. This is not an anti-Maple Leaf agenda. The issue is, and, you know, they were bringing up the example of Ovechkin, water, to quote Carlo Koliakova, water skiing behind Zach Hyman, which I love that image, is that, yes, referees don't want to be the story, but by not calling things, you're being just as much a part of the story as calling too much. Like, the thing about putting away the whistle, doesn't that inherently punish the more talented team? Because if the whistle is put away, then the less talented team can do things to negate the talent gap.
100%, which is why you get so many 8 or 7 seeds going into the NHL playoffs who go on nice runs, because the way the game's officiated just allows the less talented team to slow down the more talented player. And that happens in most sports. I mean, we see the same thing in basketball, even though the best players are still much better than the worst players, but it does start to grind down. And you do have to play differently and think differently. It's one of those great questions, like a GM conundrum. Are you building a team for success in the playoffs or the regular season? Feels like for years you built them in for the regular season, thinking that excellence would translate. Particularly in the NHL, though, I'm not sure that's always true. It seems like, you know, Montreal last year is a great example. You get great goaltending, you play the other team's stars hard, and you try not to give up too many penalties. You can win a lot of games against better teams that way. I don't know if that's a good thing about hockey. It's one of those weird things. Like it feels very democratic to say that the underdog has a real puncher's chance, you know?
Sorry, Bob, on this one.
Reward excellence.
Yeah, and this one, I want to be an elitist capitalist. I want the rich talent to succeed, and I want the less talented poor. Go back and eat your hot dogs and Kraft dinner. We're going to be over here with the prime rib.
Have you ever put mayo on a hot dog?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
I've never done it. I have to. I'm on one of my Lenten purges right now, so I had a carrot for breakfast.
Ooh. Totally off topic, and I'll just say the issue with the refs in the playoffs, you don't want them having more influence on the games than the talent. But let me ask you a food question, Bob.
Okay.
I wish there was a pill I could take that made me full after eating the mackerel. Like, I love going to the restaurant and ordering the fancy fish. You feel like more of an adult. You feel more sophisticated. It looks great on the plate. Everyone nods in approval. You're that lead adult at the restaurant. But you're never as full as the person who ordered the sloppy prime rib.
That's a great point. It's like the more, we'll call it like intellectual the food, the less it makes you full.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like nobody ever says that genius ordered the steak.
Yeah. Oh, it's yeah.
I got the branzino.
The CEO is having the Chilean sea bass. The guy who works in the mailroom got the lasagna, but guess who's more full at the end of the night?
Matt, this is one of the secrets to life. This is one of the true secrets to life, is that you can have all the fancy things in the world, but honestly, nothing beats sitting on a couch with a good snack and a good game with people you like and just enjoying your time.
Yeah.
Like you can posit all the bells and whistles, but none of them beat the brute satisfaction of just feeling full and being around good people.
And you now more than ever with Lent, man, you must be feeling that. But I, last night out for dinner, I had the Spanish mackerel, and the fact that it was called Spanish mackerel versus say Lake Erie mackerel makes it seem better. And you know what I did at the end of the night, Bob? Amy's asleep on the couch. I get some peanut butter and crackers.
Yeah, you always know that when you have the fancy meal, you just have to plan for 1B later.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. I remember first, I knew I was going to marry my wife when, after our first date, I took her to this fancy restaurant. I didn't know anything about fancy restaurants, but I knew that I liked her, so I should try to do something. And we went and we ate, and she looked at me afterwards and she said, "Do you mind if we get a burger?"
Ah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I do not mind that at all. And then we wound up getting the Commodore, which was like this dive bar out in the East End, like an old country and Western bar. We ordered like a tray of those little beers, you know, like the shot glass beers or the small beers on a tray.
Yeah.
And we slow danced to Hank Williams in the middle of this dive bar. It was like a pretty magical night now that I think about it.
That is a great date. That's fantastic.
It really was great. Yeah, that was a cool night. Yeah. Anywho.
And now she won't pick you up and you fell down after walking the dog.
Exactly. Toward the 20th anniversary is next year. Yeah. And so there we have it. So what do you do if you're doomed to power up? Because like they've got a They got a situation where they can do a couple things. They probably can't do anything big. I'm not sure they want to do anything big after last year and the, you know, the Foligno, like Riddick. It wasn't a particularly great trade deadline. How deep do you want to go into your own prospect pool to score someone? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think very deep. So what does Dubas do to power up? Or do you just hope that this team plays well in the playoffs?
I think it's that. I think it's you go after, try to get one top four-ish defenseman. And I mean, Muzzin was on the ice the other day. And you just tell the guys, listen, I want you to score all those goals in the regular season. But when the regular season ends, I want your mindset to be, let's bore the shit out of the fans and make the coach happy.
Do you think Muzzin comes back and is in the top four? Or do you think he comes back and he's in the bottom pair?
Head injury. Don't know. Horrible answer.
Probably a fair one, though.
Yeah.
I thought it was like so leafy that we're sitting here talking about goaltending while Frederik Andersen's having a really good year. And then yesterday I see that Jared McCann signs a 5-year, $25 million contract with the Kraken. And he's got, I think it was 21 goals. And Alex Kerfoot scored last night, but it was like on the same day where Kerfoot scores and you go, no, he's a nice little player. Jared McCann, who's the Kraken's best player, signs a multiple extension.
But I think that's just minutes and opportunity. In fact, that shows you how good the Maple Leafs are when you're like, oh, yeah, Jared McCann, how's he doing? Yeah, good for him for getting $5 million. Now, if you play on a real team, like that to me screams opportunity.
You know what? I keep hearing Mason Marchment's name because they gave up on him. The Leafs are in, or at least fans are kind of angry at Dubas about the goaltending. And it's like when you're in a bad mood at home and you're legitimately mad for one reason, but you're yelling about eight different things.
Yeah.
That's how these fans are right now.
Yep. No, but listen, Bunting's been great. All the moves have been good. To me, everything like McCann, great. Do what you want. Mason Marchment, swing and a miss. But everything is about either the health of Jake Muzzin or the mindset of the Maple Leafs goalies.
I actually feel like they do need a forward. I know that we talk about goalie because that's a tire fire right now. And defense has been this weird rotating series of concerns throughout the year. You know, we're worried about Justin Hall and, you know, we're worried about Travis Dermott. Like, just, it seems like everybody's had their time in the worry zone, but I kind of feel like I would like to feel better that I know they're going to score.
To that point, if you look at their three losses against Montreal, the Columbus series the year before, and then game 6 and 7 against Boston the year before that. You put those 5, 7, 10 games together, 10, 11 games together, and they're averaging barely 2 goals a game. So you can absolutely have the, does this team have enough offense come the playoffs? And that everything that trait translates back to, I mean, Nylander was great last year, so maybe it's not fair, but a lot of this goes to the fact that what's wrong with the second line? Why do we need to split up or experiment? Tavares is well-paid and talented. Nylander is well-paid and talented. Why the fuck are we worried about that second line? Those two guys should make whatever forward joins them better. It shouldn't be the job of some $1 million forward to help those guys.
I remember we talked about this at the beginning of the year with Tavares, who had a pretty slow start. And we were saying, if you're making $11 million, the coach should never have to ask, how do we get more out of him? Or who could he fit with? Literally, he should be on a line with you and me and still put up 60 points.
Yes.
So the fact that we're talking about this, and look, they're both enormously talented players. And either one of them goes on a heater, particularly William Nylander, who has, you know, he showed up for the playoffs a bunch of times. And there's no worries. However, in recent history, they're not scoring a lot in the playoffs. I know nobody does, but still, it's such a matchup chess match that if you don't have at least 2 lines going when your team is literally built to have 2 great lines, fuck, you've just like knocked that one wing on the plane.
Yeah.
You know, they need to have 2 lines going or else they become very match-upable against. So, yeah, I kind of feel as much as we talk about defense and, you know, like the truth is to go on a Stanley Cup run, you kind of need everything to be working. But quietly, I'm a little concerned about their ability to score in the playoffs.
This goes then, as we end this, can you rank it? It's the classic question everyone's asking right now. More depth scoring, another defenseman or goalie. How do you rank it?
So I would say, in terms of actual need, I would say goalie, forward, defense. In terms of what I think they can do, I would say defense, forward, goalie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, I think they can bolster the blue line with another body that can give them some meaningful games. You know, I don't know that they need a grinder as a forward. I think they need somebody who's got a bit of offensive skill, and it's not so easy to find that at the trade deadline.
No, it is not.
And as for goalie, fishing a dinghy, Matt, fishing a dinghy.
Just flopping around. So there's a bunch of places to go. I will say first, this podcast sponsored by our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. If you need legal advice, legal help, jeffpollock.com. That is Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. Also, his law firm. They do taxes and business stuff and terms that I don't understand, you know, LCRs and BDZs and LMNOPs and other things that may or may not exist. Well, tax season is here, so give him a call. Jeff Pollock's wife is a whiz with all that as well. It's a one-stop shop. So jeffpollock.com.
You know, Matt, I have thought about my life.
Yeah.
I never tried to make money. And now I think that might have been an enormous mistake. I never really understood people who are motivated by making cash. I always kind of wanted to make stuff. And then I kind of felt like if that stuff was possible, that stuff makes cash.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of now fascinated by this idea of you have money. How do you have your money make more money? This is a secondary endorsement for if that's something Jeff's team can help you do, I highly recommend it because I used to think it was shallow to worry too much about cash.
Then you have a kid.
But now I realize like in life, it's also irresponsible not to worry enough about it.
Yeah. You might have to take care of your parents. You eventually want to retire. You get kids. Things happen. Absolutely. You know, it's like, oh, I should buy real estate. That's the ticket. Well, if you're going to do that, eventually you're going to need a lawyer because real estate always requires a lawyer. So jeffpollock.com. And or get a time machine, murder Hitler, and then buy property in the beaches in the early 1990s, and you're doing well.
In that order? Murder Hitler, then get the property in the beaches?
It's the rule, Bob. It's the time travel rule. Murder Hitler first. Then you can have all your Back to the Future looper adventures that you want.
Like they say, you should wake up and make your bed immediately.
Yes.
So that way you're done.
Yeah.
You just go back in time, kill Hitler.
Yeah.
And then go on your Bill and Ted adventure.
There you go. 100%. Radical.
I asked my wife once, as a classic stupid guy, I said to her, if you could go back and live in any era, which one would you live in? She said, I'm a woman. I would live now. And I thought to myself, I should shut up.
Yeah. And then you walk away, but then you go back at some point. Where would I go and be?
Honestly, it felt like I was treating history like a buffet table at the Mandarin.
Yeah. But one word. Yeah.
Speaking of the Mandarin, which is one of our go-to references, in addition to Jaws and The Godfather and a handful of others, do you realize that we're coming up to the 50th anniversary of the release of The Godfather?
Really?
March 24th, 1972.
Wow, Godfather. You're right.
We should do a special. We should do a special where we challenge ourselves to do as many Godfather references as possible.
Okay, I'm gonna say this. You and I are going to be thrilled, and we are so arrogantly going to be pleased with ourselves by shoehorning all these references. How do you think the listeners are going to feel?
Oh, man, I think they're going to feel like Paulie.
Yeah.
Oh, you won't see him no more.
And guess what? The audience is going to be like, I wish I was Paulie right now. Instead, I'm listening to these two assholes.
Leave the pod, take the cannoli.
Exactly.
I want to talk to you about Fred Van Vliet.
Yeah.
So he comes back after missing five games. They beat the Spurs. And You know what suddenly dawned on me, and maybe this is just a revelation to me, but we spent so much time talking about how for the Raptors to be successful, Pascal Siakam had to be their best player, right?
Yes.
And it occurred to me, like, I think we've grown comfortable with the idea that actually Fred is the Raptors' best player. Discuss.
Okay, so here's my thought on that. Pascal Siakam has to be the best player because of his size, but he can't be the best player unless Fred VanVleet is out there. If I'm going to do sort of the, you know, here's my dodge. For the Raptors to be dangerous, Pascal Siakam has to be the best player and VanVleet has to be the most important player.
Okay, so this is interesting because it gets to the difference between talent and value.
Yeah.
So maybe he's not their best player, but he's their most important player. Is that a fair statement?
Correct.
When you think about the drop-off in expected play between a VanVleetless Raptors and a Siakamless, I would expect them to be worse if Fred's not in the lineup than Pascal.
Well, because Fred does so many things to help everyone around, more so than Siakam, even though Siakam's playmaking has certainly taken a jump up. I would agree with that.
The Ringer had a top 25 players in the NBA clickbait kind of thing they just put out recently, and Siakam was in the honorable mentions mm-hmm. of guys who didn't make it, and Fred did make it at 24th. And I would have thought at the beginning of the year that would be a really bad thing. But I didn't feel that way, and I was trying to figure out, why do I actually feel like I kind of agree? And it is true. I think Fred is having a better year than Pascal. But then I also thought, you know, I watched the team be very good with Kyle being the most important player. And if Fred is really going to be Kyle version 2.0, I think I'm okay with that.
The pushback is, in the end, you're not, like, unless you have the 88 Detroit Pistons with Isaiah Thomas, you don't usually win with your best player being that small. Go look at every title. And like when the Raptors won, Kawhi Leonard, pretty big physical guy, you know, and also that Raptors team was a unique one. Like they were close to the 04 Pistons where everyone on the floor was damn good. But I don't think you can go deep in the playoffs if your best player is as small as VanVleet.
I'm going to push back because we saw Phoenix last year go on a deep run when Chris Paul was their best player. I guess you could argue Devin Booker, but I think during that playoff run, Chris Paul was the key. And I think Houston would have beaten Golden State that year when it was Chris Paul and James Harden had Paul not gotten hurt. So maybe you just need the right guy. Now, in fairness, Chris Paul is like an all-time player.
Yeah, and Harden is a big free throw creating machine as well. He's not a small guard.
But even Isaiah Thomas with the Celtics, you know, running that show, and he's tiny.
That was a one year. That was a wonderful one year.
Yeah, I understand. And I think I tend to agree, as the great Pat Riley once said, in basketball, it's better to be big and good than small and good.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and there's certainly a lot of truth to that. But Fred just seems like he's evolving into one of these special characters that makes things happen.
He is. He's great. He's an all-star. He's a deserving all-star. It's a wonderful story. But for the Raptors to be a truly scary team, they need two guys to be more productive. And then they need VanVleet to be that secret sauce getting that production out of them.
So let's bounce over to Scottie Barnes, who's been on a nice run lately too.
Yep.
Where are you at on your Scottie meter right now?
I'm in a very nice spot. I liked, even though they were losing, it's like, okay, Scotty, you play a little point guard. I love that. Okay, Scotty, we're going to need you against the Spurs in the third to help give us a lead. And in the fourth, make sure that door is closed. I'm in a good headspace right now with Scotty Barnes.
When he came in, it kind of reminded me, we talked about him in the way that we used to talk about Sean Marion, the Matrix, mm-hmm. and that he was of a certain size and he seemed to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
And that was thrilling. There's been a lot of guys who have been a hell of a lot of fun to watch with that skill set. And Sean Marion was a great player, former Raptor great. But more and more, just watching him go downhill when he just gets a nose for the basket and decides he's going to like cause, you know, hell down there. I'm getting really thrilled watching him, you know, like a, you know, just like he's got the scent for the basket. And I don't know that we talked about him necessarily that way. We talked so much about his variable skill set. When he gets in the paint, he's a fucking killer.
There, I forget the game it was where he had like 8 or 9 offensive rebounds slash putbacks, dunks, layups, things like that. Here, you know what, Bob? Here's the best thing I can say about Scotty Barnes. Watching him develop, I no longer care about where the Raptors finish. You know, I'm not thinking about draft or lottery. I'm just thinking, hopefully they win as many games. I don't fear the mushy middle, because I'd rather the mushy middle than a lottery pick, because I just want Scotty Barnes out there developing. We'll see what he does against the Suns. Like, he's played so well, I don't even look at mock drafts.
Two thoughts. One is, it's too bad that Evan Mobley is so great. He feels like he's going to be the next Kornet or something, and so he'll probably win Rookie of the Year. Plus, he's playing for Cleveland. Cleveland's really good this year. It's a great story, so I don't think Scotty's going to win Rookie of the Year, but in any other year, he probably would. So there's that. The other thing about Scotty that I'm loving so much right now is, to your point about feeling, I feel like it's almost like, imagine if Chris Bosh would have had a good team around him, who he could have been as a Toronto Raptor, you know? It's like, I feel like we almost get like a redo on Chris Bosh, because he's, you know, he's a Hall of Fame player. He's an incredible player. But we fucked up his time here because it was such a useless organization around him. It's like, okay, we have that level of talent now. You have a Hall of Fame level talent here, potentially. How do we not fuck this up? Now we've got this incredibly smart infrastructure around him. It's like, oh, imagine if we, like, we've had this a couple of times. We had this with Vince. We pissed that away. You know, Kawhi was an import. He doesn't really count. It's like, this is a chance for us to take a genuine HOF level talent and make him a homegrown star.
One little pushback again, Vince Carter quit. But yes, big picture, I know what you're saying. Oh no, this is
that level of talent, right? And DeMar has been great, but nobody thought to themselves, DeMar is going to be, you know, a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah. Maybe
now, I don't know.
He will be. He'll go in the Hall of Fame, but that's partially the NBA where the Mitch Richmond rule. So
yeah, well, you know, you just keep scoring for so many years, they keep adding up. But anyway, my point is, it's a chance for us to finally not mess up having a player that great and forcing him to leave because we're, and I find that thrilling.
It is. It's like between him, Siakam, and Van Vliet, all guys, and maybe OG, all guys developed and drafted and everything here. What they need, though, is for one of those forwards, and most likely, well, I mean, you know, between Barnes or Siakam, one of them's got to take that hardest step, the next step to consistent greatness.
Mm-hmm. There's that magic word again. Do you have any other Raptors thoughts? I kind of want to talk to you about the Lakers, if you don't mind.
No, let's go to the Lakers. They lose to the Clippers. There's a great video of Westbrook missing an easy layup after a great pass by LeBron. And LeBron's like, no, I'm not playing defense on this possession. Fuck it. You guys do what you want.
Are they so bad that it's hurting LeBron and how we see LeBron?
No, because this is all about Russell Westbrook. This is all about this incredibly unique thing where Westbrook really cares. Westbrook really tries. But he gets in his own way because of his ego. And that contract. It's one of the most unique players where there's so much there to admire, yet he is an absolute albatross when it comes to winning.
I think it's the Kobe effect. That there's just a certain kind of player that wants to be Kobe. And Kobe was a unicorn. Like, he was just so great that even when he took over a team, he could do it. But I know Westbrook was a student of his. I mean, DeMar DeRozan too. Lots of guys have been students of Kobe. But right now, Westbrook to me is one of those interesting players in North America Because how could a guy so good have done so much bad? It doesn't make sense. In a world where talent dominates, it's like his talent has been a problem.
And well, I think part of it is a lot of it looks great, but he can't shoot. And on top of that, he's getting so many of his shots blocked. Like there was one of those, you know, really weird, hardcore analytics that, you know, looked at this one stretch where he had 21% of his shots blocked. That screams that there has been a drop off in the athleticism and he can't hit threes. Like it's just right now, he's a very flawed player, but our memory clouds the reality of who he is now.
I keep thinking that LA could have had Kyle Lowry and a shot to re-sign him, but they didn't want to give up Taylor Horton Tucker.
DeMar DeRozan wanted to go there as well.
Rob Pelinka. It's the old line. It's such a hackneyed line, but he must have pictures of somebody.
But also that's LeBron. LeBron wanted Westbrook there.
Great player, not so much of a GM. So another thought, because last night we had the big game between the Nets and the Sixers. So in the great nobody to cheer for sulk off, how do you feel about the Nets winning?
It made for great drama, just because the Philly fans, all the booing. It's one of the things I'm most conflicted about, because my disgustometer when it comes to Harden and Simmons is a 10 out of 10. And oh, by the way, there's Kevin Durant lurking, where there was a time where my disgustometer was a 10 out of 10 with him. It went down after what he did against Milwaukee in the playoffs last year. But on one level, I hate everything that is Harden and Simmons and what the Nets represent. But then on the other level, it is really fascinating to watch all that drama. So I am very torn. And the question I have, Bob, at any point, do actions like Harden and Simmons, does it push away a significant part of the NBA fandom? Or is it one of those things that you're going to hate it and you're going to watch it?
I don't think it changes fandom one iota, because it's drama. Because it's drama, because it sets up games like last night.
Yeah.
It was, two good teams, whatever, you know, not that New Jersey's or not that Brooklyn's been so great, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of marquee players out there on any given week that might generate some interest. But last night was the kind of night where the whole day was Stephen A. Smith clips circulating on, you know, Twitter, what he's saying about this game coming up. I mean, it's better to have someone talk about you negatively than not talk about you at all.
Yeah.
And that was the case last night. I there was this great nickname I came across. I don't know if other people have been calling this, but you know how they called Robert Horry back in the day, Big Shot Bob?
Yep.
They're calling James Harden Small Game James.
It's true.
I don't bet, and I want to talk to you about this in a minute, but I thought about betting Philly last night because I just thought James would go off and they would crush them.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much you can take from one game, but didn't you kind of want to see Harden show up? And, you know, if you're thinking Philly could want to run, does last night matter?
It certainly raises an eyebrow again to James Harden. It absolutely, it's noted. You're like, oh, once again, another thing we always reference is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Seeing a no-show from Harden, it's like Ed Rooney watching Sloan and Ferris make out, and he's like, so that's how it is in their family. I have a little bit of that with Harden.
That's a twisted but amazing reference.
Yeah, took me a little while to get there.
Oh, it was good. Hey, I got a question for you. I'm starting to run out of steam on my carrots, so I don't know how much time I have left. But
we only got a couple minutes left in the podcast anyway.
Okay, great. So we made it this far. Amazing what a carrot can do. since I've given up all culinary enjoyment during Lent, I'm going to gamble. So can you help me get set up? Because I want to learn how to gamble.
You've come at the wrong time. The best time is football. I would say right now you just bet the over for team total for the Maple Leafs and the over for the game, and you'll be happy.
Okay. And like, who's your sponsor on your show?
None as of now. There's so many deals going on between all the different giant sports betting houses and all the networks. Everyone's sort of doing this dance and talking and trying to hammer out deals. There's nothing as of yet, but at some point there will be something.
All right. So you'll let me know when you have a sponsor, because I'm not going to listen to the show, but yeah. I do want to support it. And so, well, come on, Matt. Like, would you listen to me?
Yes. By the way, really? Bob, my opening thought yesterday had references to Bernie Kosar, Serena Williams, Willie Loman. It had everything. Snoop Dogg. It had everything yesterday.
Now, are all of those connected under one umbrella, or are you just like randomly dropping
names? Under one umbrella. Also, Mike Douglas, Bob Hope, Jimmy Stewart, Michael Phelps, all under one umbrella.
Are they all Republican?
No, I was talking about Tiger Woods and his retirement ceremony and how disappointed I was that no one, that it didn't get a bigger deal, just got Golf Network.
He retired?
Well, sorry, not retired. His Hall of Fame induction ceremony was on Wednesday night and no one knew. It was on the Golf Channel. I'm like, wait, this is Tiger Woods. NBC couldn't have done a one-hour special on a sleepy Wednesday night.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, right?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on the baseball deal getting done? We led with it last week, but now that it's resolved, we buried it in the PS.
There'll be plenty of time. I'm glad it's done. It's the most boring thing to cover is labor negotiations. Everyone hates players. Everyone hates owners. Everyone hates fans for hating players. And just it's all that big rigmarole. The only question I have, will this new CBA actually incentivize more teams to go for wins? Maybe it will because there's more playoff teams. Will it incentivize teams for not doing Tampa Ray things and not spending money? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, I got to say, like most leagues, when they start incorporating more playoff teams or more playoff games, I think it's bullshit and it's obviously a cash grab. But this is one instance where I actually think baseball needed a couple more playoff teams.
Yeah.
Especially if they're shorter series. You know, you don't need to go seven, but I don't love the play-in in basketball. I think it's a needless gimmick. You know, hockey, shit, more, you know, like half the teams get into the playoffs. That seems like too many to me, but baseball needed a couple more.
They did. So I'm just glad it's back because I don't like talking about legal stuff because that's when I get dumb.
Did you talk to Jeff at all, Jeff Pollock, about the legal stuff? Did you call him and ask him when are they going to get this thing resolved?
Bob, when Jeff and I talk, you would hate it. It's basically, well, you'd like part of it. We talk about food and wine and what to pair what with what.
So funny. Jeff and I talk about politics and global economics.
Yep.
And you guys talk about getting drunk and what snacks go best with getting drunk.
Bob, it's with high-end wine. It's classy drunk. Very different.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Does different booze get you drunk differently, or is drunk always drunk?
No, I think, and we got to go, but I think, you know, everything is different because of the level of alcohol. Like, you know, I think a whiskey drunk is different than a beer drunk and all that kind of stuff. So no, there's a wide assortment of different drunks.
You know, because with weed, like the buzz is very different. Indica, sativa, like there's just different things it does to you. Like some are sleepy buzzes, some are psychedelic buzzes, you know, but my experience drinking, and maybe it's because it was always cheap booze, was it always had exactly the same arc. Euphoria, self-aggrandizement, euphoric self-aggrandizement, sleep.
As you get older, there's less I can't even say that word, and it's just more sleep.
Well, that seems like a good place to end the pod then. Let's go to sleep, Matt. It's Friday. We'll have ourselves some, what's one of your fancy Jeff Pollock foods?
Oh, it's Montrachet and lobster, my man. You go enjoy your lobster, or you go enjoy your carrots. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.